Samira, hello, it's World. Hi, you're coming in really low. Can anyone boost your audio level?
Global stock markets plunge on weak Chinese data and worries that the Federal Reserve may stop pumping money into the US economy.
Can you keep talking and we'll try and do something orange?
Chief Christine Lagarde has arrived at a court in Paris for questioning over a payout to a controversial tycoon during her time as finance minister.
Great, Samira. Fantastic. We'll come to you just after. We're going to have SOT next and then we'll come to you. So about a minute to you now.
The British Prime Minister, David Cameron's been to the barracks near the scene where the murdered soldier was based. We'll take the word scene out. It's just after said scene. Earlier, he described the attackers as sickening individuals. He said Britain would defeat people like that by challenging the poisonous narrative.
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger.
His hands have been broadcast all over the world, but is this a defining moment for terror, not only in the way it's carried out by, but the way we report it? Hello, welcome. The UK will never give in to terror or terrorism. The words of the British Prime Minister after a dramatic 24 hours, the violent and very public killing of a serving soldier on the streets of London has shocked the nation. Across London, there are more than 1,000 officers, extra officers on the streets. The full facts about what happened on yesterday afternoon are still emerging. But this is what we know so far. It took place in Woolwich in southeast London, about 22 kilometres. That far, is it? From the centre. Really? That's a bit far, isn't it? Just over... I know it's sort of Thames Mead, isn't it? Just what? Hello, where's my queue? I'm just reading through. Can we have the queue back on Otiki? Just after 2 p.m, a soldier leaves a military barracks. I'll just read it. And is then hit by a car as he walks along the road. Two men jump out of the car and attack him with knives and a meat cleaver. The men then drag his body into the middle of the road. The attack took place in Woolwich in southeast London, about 22 kilometres from the city centre. Just after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the soldier leaves the military barracks and is then hit by a car as he walks along the road. Two men jump out of the car and attack him with knives and a meat cleaver. Then they drag his body into the middle of the road. Eyewitnesses say one of the men said he carried out the attack because British soldiers killed Muslims every day. When police arrived, 14 minutes later, the men reportedly charged at the car with their weapons. We take, are said to have, or people say, witnesses say, officers shoot the attackers. They're now in hospital under armed guard. Sources say the suspects were known to security services. One of the suspects is understood to be a 28-year-old Muslim convert, Michael Adebolajo. We're not going to say he was of the Nigerian. Okay, Simons. Tom Simons, yeah? Okay, it's all right. Got eerily quiet. Yeah. Wow. Can you see anything? No.
Tim, hello. It's World News. Jenny here. Oh, no, I'm not hearing you. Keep talking, Tim. I'll check with Scar. Got you.
Hello, I'm Karen Giannone. An act of terror that defies all understanding. A soldier's...
Okay, Tim, it's Karen in the studio. And you'll be with you after... Yes, we're on air now. I'll be with you after our headlines and intro.
It was also a betrayal of Islam. Our top story on Impact today.
Tim, confirming you'll be topping the Simons package. Yes, please.
In hospitals after being shot by police. The public have brought flowers to the...
Yeah, we've also got a Frank Gardner package as well, and then your two guests.
It was based. Earlier, he described the attackers as sickening individuals. He said Britain would defeat such people by challenging the poisonous narrative of extremism.
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger.
Images of the suspect with blood on his hands have been broadcast all over the world. But is this a defining moment for terror, not only in the way it's carried out, but the way we report it?
We'll be able to chat to them under the package. It's a long package, 2:15 long.
Hello and welcome. The UK will never give in to terror or terrorism. Those are the words of the British Prime Minister after a dramatic 24 hours. The violent and very public killing of a serving soldier on the streets of London has shocked the nation. Across London, there are more than 1,000 extra police officers on the streets. The full facts about what happened yesterday afternoon are still emerging, but this is what we know so far. It took place in Woolwich, which is in southeast London, around 20 kilometres from the centre. Just after 2 p.m. local time, a soldier leaves a military barracks and is then hit by a car as he walks along the road. Two men jump out of the car and attack him with knives and a meat cleaver. The men then drag his body into the middle of the road. Eyewitnesses say one of the men said he carried out the attack because British soldiers killed Muslims every day. When armed police arrived 14 minutes later, the men are said to have charged at the car with their weapons. Officers shoot the attackers. They're now in hospital under armed guard. Sources say the suspects were known to security services. One of the suspects is understood to be a 28-year-old Muslim convert, Michael Adebolajo. Well, let's cross to Woolwich and get the very latest from Tim Wilcox. Tim.
Thanks, Tim. On this 2:15, Kevin, then you're talking into a Frank Gardner.
The murders.
Package.
Woolwich
back. And then confirm you've got two guests with you.
A massive police operation is...
That Julia and Nick Gray?
Officers were searching the ground inch by inch, trying to reconstruct the minutes of madness that left a British soldier dead on a British street. Trying to work out why these men acted as they did.
Remove your cuffs. Tim, can you confirm how...
Government's Cobra emergency...
Sorry, I was going to say, can you confirm how Julia's surname is spelled?
The suspects were known to the security services. The Prime Minister said yesterday's events were not just an attack on us, but a betrayal of Islam.
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger.
Do you have Nick Rainsford as well, Tim?
Our thoughts are with the victim and with his family. They are grieving for their loved one, and we have lost a brave soldier.
The London Mayor, Boris Johnson, arrived in Woolwich mid-morning. He spent time discussing the incident with senior police officers. He's described what happened here as sickening and unforgivable.
Just to let you know, Tim, there are payoffs on both packages.
It appears to be focusing on family members of the attackers. This flat in Greenwich was raided early this morning. Neighbours said three unidentified women and a teenager were taken away.
Tim, I'm confirming the former Metropolitan Police firearms person is Roger Gray, is it?
Members of the English Defence League briefed with police. The town centre was flooded with officers, and that operation continues.
Across London, we have an extra 1,200 officers on duty at the moment, who are being highly visible to reassure...
20 seconds, Tim, to you, 20 seconds.
...carries on at normal, and my appeal is for calm while this investigation...
OK, so talking to the Frank Gardner next, 50.
Dead soldier is expected to be revealed shortly. The MOD is still...
8, 7, 6, 5, 4...
On the 152.
Painstaking search...
Your guests next.
Evidence is underway at the scene of the attack in Woolwich. It's now emerged that the suspect...
There is a payoff, yeah.
...security service for their radical views, but it's not thought that they were under surveillance.
Morning.
This morning in Whitehall, key...
It's another a minute and a half yet.
Arrived for a meeting at the government's emergency committee called COBRA. The Prime Minister chaired it. Boris Johnson was amongst those attending.
It is completely wrong to blame this killing on the religion of Islam. But it is also equally wrong to try to draw any link between this murder and British foreign policy or the actions of British forces who are risking their lives abroad for the sake of freedom.
This is where one of the suspects has been taken, the Royal...
Tim, you have 4 minutes for the interview.
I'd like to be questioned when he recovers from being shot by the police yesterday. The lines of inquiry being followed up by investigators include, were they acting alone? Who did they meet? And where did they travel to? As the people of Woolwich still come to terms with what's happened on their streets, one former British radical says the attackers understood the propaganda value of their message.
Where we have failed...
30 seconds.
...authorising counter-narratives to this ideology that completely disconnects somebody who, quite clearly speaking, in a London accent, and is willing to kill his own fellow citizens...
20 seconds.
...that he's never visited, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan, and he has more affinity to...
15, then, Tim.
...than he has to his own citizens.
This is based on murder inquiry.
10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Q-tip.
Tim, lean to your left. You're in sure shot. 3 minutes. 2 minutes. Minute and a half. One. Take a step to your left, Tim. You can't see her. And again, another step to your left. Last one.
Tim, thank you very much for the moment. Tim Wilcox there in Woolwich. But we are going to bring
Tim. That is clear. Thank you very much for that. We're really pleased with the mix of guests and well done with you. Thank you, cameraman, as well, for working around.
You can find the latest news as well as analysis from our correspondents, as well as those eyewitnesses' accounts from people who actually saw the attack. That's at bbc.com/news. We'll have more on that story to come. Now, let's have a look at some other news from around the world. A Bangladesh government report into the collapse of a multi-storey factory which killed more than 1,000 people has uncovered a number of violations. The report said the building had been built with substandard materials on unsuitable land. It also recommended life sentences for the building's owner and other garment factory owners operating in it. The former Iranian president, Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, has accused Iran's leaders of incompetence and ignorance. It comes just 2 days after he and another candidate were disqualified from next month's presidential election. He's quoted as saying, "I don't think the country could have been run worse." The IMF chief, Christine Lagarde, has arrived at a court in Paris for questioning over a payout made during her time as finance minister. She's being asked to explain her handling of a row in 2007, which resulted in some $516 million being paid to a controversial tycoon. Now, youth unemployment and resentment among asylum seekers are being blamed for riots sweeping the Swedish capital, Stockholm. The violence has continued for a fourth night, with growing fears that decades of integration efforts have gone dangerously awry. Nick Childs has this report.
Another night dousing flames on the streets in the poorest, mainly immigrant suburbs of the Swedish capital. All this week, in darkness, there have been youths on the rampage, burning cars, hurling stones, vandalizing buildings, and generally spreading alarm. The ongoing unrest, 4 nights in a row now, has led the police to change their tactics in response.
We are blivit betydligt mer offensiva nu för att.
We're much more offensive now to prevent, stop, and if that's not enough, arrest people.
That's because the emergency services, firefighters as well as the police, have become targets of the rioters.
Det är fruktansvärt. It's awful. The absolutely worst thing is that people have thrown stones against the emergency services who have come here to extinguish the fires. It's scary, I think.
And as Swedes reflect on the wreckage of the last few days, what's behind it all? It may have been sparked by the fatal police shooting of a 69-year-old man in one suburb last week, amid wider allegations of heavy-handed policing. And has it been stoked by youth unemployment and immigrant tensions? The Prime Minister has dismissed the violence as hooliganism and appealed for calm. There may be underlying issues at work here, but whatever the cause, these images have shocked a country that is facing austerity, but not the level of crisis that's wrecked the economies and provoked public unrest in some other European countries. Nick Childs, BBC News.
Stay with us here on Impact. Still to come, one Oklahoma man's desperate search to find his son after the tornado.
I called my wife, and at that time, she said that the school just was hit where my son was at. She said they're showing his wife done.
Hi, I'm Ros Atkins. I want to show you our new video uploader. It's now much easier for you to give us things that you've seen or questions or comments that you have about the day's news. In fact, some of you are using it already.
Hello, my name is Bishar Ghulam Mustafa. I'm from Punjab, Pakistan.
My name is Bruce. I'm an American, but I live in Canada.
My name is Tom Burns, and I'm from Melbourne, Australia.
All you have to do is go to worldhaveyoursay.com.
I recorded this on my phone, and once I'd done that, I came to this page at worldhaveyoursay.com, clicked on upload, selected the file, and that was that.
Or you can use a webcam through any computer. Just go to the same page. When you're there, click record, say what you've got to say, then press stop, scroll down, click submit, and we'll do the rest. So that's the new BBC video uploader. You can get it at worldhaveyoursay.com. I'm interested to see what you send me.
Hello again, I'm Karen Ginoni. You're watching Impact from the BBC, our main news today. It's emerged both the suspects in the brutal murder of a soldier on the streets of London were already known to the security services. The British Prime Minister, David Cameron, who's been visiting the area where the attack took place, has said he will never give in to terrorism. Well, footage of the terrible events was shared on social media around the world using hashtags like Woolwich and after what one of the suspects was recorded saying, not in my name. Well, let's go to Daniela Ritotto, who's in the World's Newsroom, for more on how we cover events like this. Hi, Daniela.
Hi, Karen. There's no doubt we live in a world of instant news. Half of us have smartphones which can not only take photos and video instantly, but couple of clicks and that can be uploaded and broadcast around the world. I know myself, I was watching events unfold on Twitter as well. So what does the BBC do in a situation like this? What's our role when everyone can be a citizen journalist? Let's have a chat about it with Trusha Barrett from our user-generated content team and Julian Cousins, one of the editors here on BBC World News. Trusha, I'll start with you. An event comes through, people start tweeting, what happens next?
Well, our team's job really is to try and work out amongst all these millions of tweets that are going out on Twitter at any one moment, which are the ones that are actually most relevant to this story, and really trying to filter out all the general noise and general chatter about an event and actually try and find people who are eyewitnesses or potentially have pictures or video. So the first thing is really trying to drill down to those tweets which are most relevant and then trying to work out how can we actually get hold of them, can we verify and check out what they're actually saying and what they're actually uploading, and is it genuine material?
That's what I'm really interested in. How do you verify?
The most simple way is to actually try and get hold of the person who's uploaded this content and actually have a conversation with them in terms of, you know, who they are, why are they there, what can they see, what do they do. Quite often it's not possible to speak to them immediately, and so we'll try and see if there are other additional checks we can make around that material. So if there are buildings in the background to an image, you know, can we try and work out or triangulate the location based on other sort of geographic searches or, you know, map searches and things like that.
Okay, now I think we've got some video that we can play that your team did get their hands on. We'll talk about how you got that video and what happened to it once you got it.
So, yeah, this video appeared on YouTube, I think, within sort of an hour or so after the first reports came out about this incident. By that time, we'd already seen some still images of this scene. And so when we looked at the video, we were very clear that this was actually of the same event and it wasn't of something unrelated. And so we were quite sure that it was credible content. And then we managed to get hold of the person who uploaded it and they managed to confirm some further details with us, which gave us enough confidence to run it.
Okay. Julian, that's the next step, isn't it? Because instinctually, you get your hands on a video as a journalist, you want to put it to air as fast as you can. But what are the considerations? What do journalists and news organisations like the BBC need to think about?
Yeah, clearly we're in a competitive environment and we want to turn material around as fast as we can. Having said that, you know, we've got to be absolutely satisfied about its veracity, and there are limits for us in the case of a murder or a killing. We have a policy of respect for the dead. We're very controlled about what imagery we show of dead bodies. We very rarely show identifiable dead bodies. So there are limits and it's a balance.
And Julian, in this day and age, as we were discussing earlier, when everyone can be a citizen journalist, what is our role here at the BBC? Is it to filter this information that's coming through?
For news junkies who want the material, there's tons of it out there. I mean, there's no limit to the amount of material available. Our job is to select, is to make a selection on behalf of viewers who want to just know what's going on that's important right now, a selection that makes sense of it all. That's our job.
Indeed. And I think social media isn't just being used to get news and to verify sources. I think it's a tribute in this day and age as well. I think we've got a Facebook page that's received something like 1 million likes. Trusha, is that a lot, 1 million likes in 24 hours or so?
Yeah, actually, it reached 1 million likes probably more like 14 hours or so. And that is quite a significant uptake in a story like this, on a page like this. It would be, you know, not unexpected to maybe get tens of thousands of likes on a particular story like this, but 1 million is quite significant.
There you go, Karen. I hope we've explained a little bit about how we go about verifying content in stories, big stories like this. I'll back to you.
Yella, thank you very much indeed. Yeah, I was certainly following the story on Twitter, on the train actually, on my way home, I suppose like many others. We will have more on the attack on London as the story develops, as we get more information about the suspect. That's in our next edition of Impact, coming up in just a few. Let's turn to other news. And the tornado which ripped through Oklahoma on Monday devastated two primary schools. With just 16 minutes warning of the approaching storm, many parents were unable to get their children to safety in time. Well, let's hear the story now of Joe Darbon, who was at work when it struck. Once the storm had passed, Joe and his neighbour raced to find Joe's son. They spoke to the BBC's David Botti about this harrowing hour.
Dude, that thing is freaking huge.
I was at work when they sounded the alarms for the tornado warning in our area. I was stuck in between, do I have enough time to rescue both of my kids, which were both in the path of the tornado. I knew there was no way. I left the shelter, and I went to the restroom, and I prayed. I got in my truck. I called my wife, and at that time, she said that the school just was hit, where my son was at. Briarwood Elementary, she said they're showing it's wiped out.
Got into a different mindset or a different mode, and then it was kind of rescue mode. And I thought, we've got to get to the school.
I wanted to find my son so bad, but it was so much debris. I almost lost hope. I started calling his name, and his teacher started waving his hand. She was in the field, and I'm looking, I see her. So I start going towards her, and I didn't see my son. She said, no. She said, your neighbor's got it.
As Hezekiah was coming out from the rubble where the teachers had students, he ran to me. And we just stayed there with him.
I got you. What'd I tell you? And that was Jim. My son looked to him as a grandfather. That's his buddy. So when she said that, I was so at ease and I hadn't even found him yet. Because I knew that he was in good hands. So as I'm looking around and she said he has him. So when I see him, he runs. Across the street, we embrace. It's a feeling that I don't wish on any parent to have to experience. But it was the best feeling I felt in my life to finally embrace it.
An extraordinary story of a rescue there and survival again. Thanks for being with us here on Impact. We'll be back soon. I've just had a chat with my person there. They're being very... Hello, welcome back. You're watching Impact with me, Karin Ginoni. The attack on a soldier in London continues to make waves across the world. As we get more information about the suspects, we'll be talking about what we know and the implications with a security expert and a guest from the Islamic Society of Britain. Hello. Yesterday's brutal attack on a soldier in southeast London caught Britain by surprise as details began to leak out through the media. The internet flew into wild speculation into the reasons behind it. Whilst details remain scarce still, we're now beginning to put together a clearer picture of the events of Wednesday. With me is Julie Siddiqui from the Islamic Society of Britain, and I'm also joined by Margaret Gilmore from the Royal United Services Institute here in London. She's a senior research fellow specialising in homeland security in the UK. Welcome to you both. Margaret, first of all, what we've been learning over the last couple of hours is these two individuals, the suspects, were known to security services, but not part of any active investigation.
Yes, I've been having a chat with some insiders, and they were known. Not surprising in a way, because they do have an awful lot of coverage now of people who are involved in the rhetoric of extremism. So whether they were under surveillance, fine. Clearly not part of any conspiracy. If they were part of a long-term plan to carry out a specific plot, they would have been under surveillance right now. So I think the indication is that they had not been to some terrorist hotspot somewhere else in the world for training. They certainly hadn't been spending time in a flat building a bomb or something like that. So it could have been a very spur-of-the-moment decision, albeit premeditated.
Right, because the actual simplicity, horrific simplicity of this attack was perhaps what made it actually result in being carried out. If you are more ambitious, if you try to build a bomb, for example, there are going to be things that flag up, perhaps in your behaviour, that will raise the alert of the security services.
There's more time, the kind of conversations you have, your planning, your target, that sort of thing. So you can put the targets on higher alert. There are all sorts of signposts, the way you're travelling, who you're travelling to, the type of thing you're buying. This didn't happen in the case of these people, though they clearly were in and out and were on the verge of extremism, but nothing while they were on the radar, as it were, made the security services or anyone else suddenly think, hang on, they are going to tip over to violent extremism. And I think one of the challenges now is the worry that because of the simplicity, to ensure that there aren't copycats. Luckily, I think most people would not be capable of carrying out such an atrocity, but that's one thing they're going to have to keep an eye on.
Julie, when someone does this in the name of Islam, what does it make you feel? Are you angry?
I think today I kind of feel determined, actually, that we need to move on from this. But I think the first feeling really was yesterday, as I saw it unfold on the radio, then obviously on the TV in the evening, it was just utter disbelief and shock. And then I think as the news started to come through that possibly these people were somehow going to link it to my faith, my heart sank, because I just feel, you know, it makes you feel so even worse than we did before. We all feel it as a country, clearly, but that feeling of how can somebody possibly even think about doing something like that and then linking it back to the faith that I am part of, it is really, really upsetting.
David Cameron stands up defiantly saying this is not going to change us, we will not let terrorists win, to paraphrase his words, but do you fear that there will be preconceptions, there will be prejudices in some people's minds, that something like this will just go on and confirm those prejudices?
I mean, of course, I really feel for the people in this country right now trying to come to terms with this and really understand it. And obviously there's a lot of confusion, you know, why would somebody do that in such a brutal way and then somehow link it back to a faith? You know, there's no justification for this whatsoever. There's absolutely nothing that can justify. You have to condemn it at every level. And thankfully, all the Muslim organisations and individuals, imams up and down the country, have done exactly that. You know, this was an attack on our country, all of us, and we have to think about what we do now moving forward. But people do feel vulnerable today. There's no doubt about that. People do feel that, you know, we need to be careful to make sure this doesn't escalate even further, you know, in different ways.
When we had the horrible attacks of 7/7 back in 2005, of course, we heard the same things about what the leaders in the Muslim communities needed to do. Do you think they could have been doing more? Do you think, I mean, really one of the only weapons against something like this happening is going to be spotting radicalization or stopping it before it even happens? Are they doing enough?
Well, I mean, I think as we've already heard, it's very, very complex. And one of the things I would say is no one can be complacent today. You know, having seen what we've seen, everyone needs to relook at what they're doing or not doing and what can be done differently, because what we've seen cannot be allowed to happen ever again. And we have to be clear about that. So I would say, you know, we need to wait, get a bit more information about who these men were, who they're working with. But I would say, you know, no doubt if there are people who are linked either directly or indirectly with these people and creating this kind of rhetoric that we've seen played out so horrifically as we did yesterday, then those people also need to be caught and brought to justice, you know, as quickly as possible.
Margaret, in the intelligence gathering and police investigation world, do you think this is going to change something?
I don't think it's a surprise, because the terrorist is continually morphing to do something else. They want the publicity. These guys were clearly seeking it. You have to have a certain mentality to be able to actually carry it out. And I think already, given attacks like the Mumbai attack 2008, they were aware that that really sort of violent attack on the street was a possibility. And that's actually got through yesterday. So I think they are looking, and this is just picking up on your point, at how they can spot the people who are likely to be triggered. And it has to go wider than just the police or the intelligence service, who are seeing a complete huge soup of people who are extreme but not necessarily going to go into the violence. And are there other people in authority? And it's not just the leaders of the mosque, it's not just the police or the intelligence agencies. Could it be a teacher? Could it be a doctor? Is there somebody who can spot there's something a little bit different? Should we be thinking in a different kind of way? Because these are very, very rare people. So something about them must at some point make somebody think, hang on a minute, we need to check this
out. Julie, you're nodding at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I say, it is complex. I think I would agree with David Cameron, you know, what he said in the speech earlier, and also about the idea that we don't want a knee-jerk reaction either. So we have to be balanced and measured, but make sure we deal with this robustly. And that applies to all of us. You know, this could easily escalate, you know, out of control, and we don't want that. So I think we can't allow the extremists on any side to capitalise on this in the way that they want to. They're seeking to divide us already as a country, and we won't allow that. So we've heard it from the Prime Minister, we hear it from the community leaders and from everyone, really, that we're not going to allow this to divide the country, because this is an attack on all of us.
Do you think,
and we need to do what we can.
Do you think Muslims are under pressure to react right away?
And I think people just feel so sickened and outraged by it that there's no need to prompt anybody to speak out about this, because it was so bad that I think people just, you know, it's so shocking that there's nothing else that we can say apart from how much we would condemn it, and there's no place for this in our, you know, faith whatsoever.
Margaret, I mean, everybody was surprised by the way the suspects behaved afterwards. I mean, this is, at least here in this country, unprecedented.
Well, yes and no, because the suicide bombers on July 7th, 2005, made videos
before,
and
yeah,
before, and boosted, and these guys decided they wanted to be filmed and they wanted to explain it, and they waited.
But there was no fear of the authorities.
Yeah, they waited for their so-called martyrdom, by all intents and purposes. And the police came in, and to give them their due, they did shoot them to stop them doing anything more, and they were worried they were coming towards the police car, you know, with a gun and machete, but they shot them, but they didn't kill them. So these guys have not been killed, they haven't got their martyrdom, they will be brought to justice, and hopefully we will get some much clearer answers as time goes by,
yeah,
as to what made them do it and why, and justice will happen in a way that doesn't always, if you have a suicide bomber, in the way we've known before.
And those, the things that police will be looking for right now, what will be the most, briefly if you will, the most important facts?
It's got to be, are there other associates of these guys who are going to do the same? And is there anyone else with the capability, and let's face it, most people do not have that capability of doing it, who will try a copycat?
Margaret, thank you very much. Margaret Gilmore, Julie Siddiqui, thank you very much to you both. Now do stay with us here on Impact. Still to come, I'll be speaking to a filmmaker who's been to the heart of America's drug war and find out whether there's any chance of victory. Hello again, I'm Karen Giannone. You're watching Impacts from the BBC, our main news today. It's emerged both the suspects in the brutal murder of a soldier on the streets of London were already known to the security service. Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron, who's been visiting the area where the attack took place, has said Britain will never give in to terrorism. Let's turn our attention to the sports news and go over to Amelia Harris-Lindsay. Amelia.
Hi there, Karen. Thanks very much indeed. Yes, Sergio Garcia has teed off in the European Tour PGA Championship, but earlier on Thursday, he was facing pressure from his sponsors over comments he made about Tiger Woods. Golf equipment company TaylorMade, owned by the German sportswear group Adidas, have issued a strongly worded statement saying his comments were offensive and clearly out of bounds, and that they are continuing to review the matter. Garcia, though, made these comments earlier in the week and says that he is very regretful for what he said. Well, let's get to the golf then. At Wentworth, Finland, Niko Ilonen's top of the leaderboard on day one, back in the clubhouse after a 5-under 65. Garcia 1-under, though, with the defending champion Luke Donald. World number two there, Rory McIlroy, both 2 over par. There's another name in the hat for one of the biggest jobs in world sport. Taiwan's Wu Chinko is the latest to announce his candidacy for the president of the International Olympic Committee, or the IOC. The 66-year-old is the current International Amateur Boxing Association president, and along with Singapore's Ong Seo Myung, he's aiming to become the first Asian to hold the post. Thomas Bach of Germany has also announced his intention to run, and they are all aiming to succeed the outgoing Jacques Rogge in the September election.
The target is clean, that never changed. So I take this opportunity in my manifesto.
The International Cricket Council has withdrawn Pakistani umpire Asad Rauf from the Champions Trophy after reports that he's under suspicion for his role in spot fixing in the Indian Premier League. Now, Rauf is one of the umpires who officiated in the controversial match under suspicion of spot fixing by the three arrested Rajasthan Royal cricketers, Shantakumara Shrisanth, Ajit Chandala and Ankit Chavran. Staying with cricket, in Australia's David Warner has been facing the music after an angry outburst that he made on the social networking site Twitter. Warner used some pretty colourful language in a verbal attack on two journalists. He's been fined more than $5,500, and now Warner, who's part of Australia's squad to face England in the next month's Ashes, says he's sorry.
I deserved what I got delivered yesterday by the judge. Obviously, I'm extremely remorseful of the comments that I made, and next time I've got to be a bit more professional with the choice of words that I use. Some of the guys think it's comical, and some of the guys think it was disgraceful what I did. But at the end of the day, if I didn't use the language that I did, it might have went the other way. But at the end of the day, as I said, I apologise for the language I use, and if I offended anyone, I apologise.
So plenty of sport taking place across the world today, Cara, and I'll be back later on with another update. See you later.
There certainly is, Amelia. Thank you very much. The war on drugs in the US is unfairly stacked against the black communities. Well, that's the opinion of my next guest, the filmmaker Eugene Jarecki. His latest film, The House I Live In, won the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival last year. In it, he says affluent white people are the main drug users, but the police choose to target the poor. But first, let's take a look at a clip of the film.
Beyond the incentives that exist for individual officers, it turns out that whole departments have a monetary interest in increased drug arrests.
A couple months ago, we did a two-day operation. We arrested over 200 people, the majority of them for selling drugs. A lot of the money comes out of seizures from the drug profits that the bigger players are making off of this. So I guess that money is being put to good use.
Instead of saying, let's get rid of all these drug addicts and drug dealers, and once we throw away the key on them, we'll solve this problem. Why don't you try saying it to yourself this way? All these Americans that we don't need anymore, the factories are closed, we don't need them, the textile mills, they're gone, GM is closing plants. We don't need these people. They're extra Americans. We don't need them. Let's just get rid of the bottom.
David Simon, the creator of the TV series The Wire there in that clip of Eugene's film. Eugene, thank you very much for coming in. That is a very, very strong message that David Simon ends there. We don't need these people. We don't need the bottom 15% of the population. A lot of people be very upset.
Well, he goes on to say, why don't we just kill the poor? It would be a lot better. Just sort of more honest with ourselves.
How do you get to that conclusion? What is your evidence?
Well, if you look at the drug war, where in 40 years we've had 45 million drug arrests, we spent $1 trillion. We've amassed the largest prison population in the world. America, the beacon of freedom, holds more prisoners than any other country in the world. We have 5% of the world's population, yet 25% of its prisoners, 2.3 million, behind bars. And when you go into the prisons, what you find is a lot of nonviolent people who are there because they're addicts, and they're there because they're low-hanging fruit. They're easy to target for the police, easy to target for legislators who make laws that specially stigmatize certain groups. And, crack is punished 100 times more severely than powder. That's no accident.
When you talk about certain groups, are you talking about certain racial groups?
Originally, we were. We've had racist drug laws in America since the 1800s. The first laws were passed against Chinese immigrants with opium laws. But it's been chapter by chapter about race until the war on drugs, which is a modern phenomenon. That kind of, it did what wars do. It created the industries of war, the bureaucratic thrust of war, the sort of entrenched bureaucracies that won't let go of a war. And we have so many of those. But in the case of the war on drugs, that democratized the war toward class, not just poor black people, but now poor white people, poor Latino people, women, growing groups.
So let's just listen to another clip. You were talking about how those laws arose. This is one clip which talks about that some more.
In the 1800s, certain kinds of drugs that are illicit today were common in this country. Cocaine was widely used, heroin. People using drugs, it was something that was just ordinarily accepted. Opium, for example, was used by middle-aged, successful whites, often housewives in the South. If people were addicted or abusing drugs, they were viewed sympathetically as people who had to be helped, public health issue rather than a crime.
Eugene, last month we heard the White House saying that they were turning their attention in the war on drugs to focusing on this being a public health issue as well as it being a criminal justice issue.
Sure. Well, I don't think it's a criminal justice issue. I think it's only a public health issue. And America made a grave mistake 40 years ago, criminalizing this. I say this as a representative coming across the ocean to really say to the British people, don't try this at home. The American model has been a disaster. We know it's a disaster. White House officials always try to sort of play the game of saving face and playing with little statistics that say maybe it isn't a complete total failure disaster. It is. We have nothing to show for it but cheaper drugs, more available drugs, greater violence, etc.
When you say it is not a criminal justice issue, I mean, I heard one congressman in your film saying, as many people believe, these people are killing our kids, they are disrupting society, these people are wrecking our society. They deserve to be behind bars.
Sure. Well, in general, what we see in America, when you look at real violence take place on the streets, you invariably notice that the police who should have been looking out for that kind of violence are instead sitting in their patrol cars, incentivized to rack up petty arrests. They're doing that here in London, too. It's why acts of violence happen and the cops aren't noticing until it's too late, because they're busy with the silly preoccupation that the drug war represents for America, and Britain has sort of caught that bug as well.
If you say, if you take what you're saying and apply it to Britain or any other country, there will people say, what is the alternative? I mean, are you really going to just let people free?
Not
are you
at
just going to have people taking drugs willy-nilly?
The opposite. You need to treat drugs with the seriousness they deserve. It's a public health crisis in America, and I would argue here as well. And instead, we treated it as a crime, so we left the addiction unaddressed. So we've now had a rampant addiction problem explode on us in America when we should have taken it seriously. Governments need to tax and regulate drugs and treat them as a serious health matter and to devote serious public resources. The good news is you save a lot of money doing that because it's much cheaper than treating it as a criminal matter where you never solve it and all you do is make an industry based on incarcerating people.
Is there really any politician anywhere that's going to
campaign this is changing
on being lenient on crime?
Well, they're not being lenient. They're being smart on crime. Being tough on crime is being stupid on crime. When you are too tough on people in your neighborhood who are nonviolent, you turn them into violent people. Those cops who are busy on petty drug arrests and ignoring serious threats of violence like happened here yesterday, those cops are imperiling public safety. The drug war doesn't make us safe. It makes us less safe.
Eugene, we must leave it there. Eugene Jarecki, thank you very much indeed for
coming.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us here on Impact via Twitter. I'm at BBC Karen G. And you can see what we're working on our Facebook page, all the very latest updates on our BBC website as well on the events in Woolwich on Wednesday afternoon. Stay with us here. Impact's coming back in a while.
Hi, Tim. Hi, 777 as well. Hi, Tim.
Distant meeting.
Yeah, it's just about... Can you just tap your microphone? Yeah, we're getting you clear now. Just keep on talking, please, Tim. That's fine. Thanks, Tim.
Done it. Tim, it's Simon. Hi. Just talk you through this section, Tim. It's a throw to you. You do the intro to the Simons package, then the Gardner package, and then you're introing the Rainsford Sot as well. And they've all got payoffs again.
Hello, I'm Karen Ginoni.
Just rehearsal.
Defies all understanding as soldiers murdered in a London street in broad daylight. The Prime Minister says it was not just an attack on Britain and the British way of life, it was also a betrayal of Islam. Our top story on Impact today. It's now emerged that both the suspects in the brutal attack were already known to the security services. The British Prime Minister David Cameron's been to the barracks near where the soldier was based. Earlier, he described the attackers as sickening individuals. He said Britain would defeat such people by challenging the poisonous narrative of extremism.
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger.
And also on Impact, we meet the head of one of Afghanistan's biggest media companies, who has a surprisingly upbeat view of the country's... Welcome. The UK will never give in to terrorism. The words of the British Prime Minister after dramatic.
On air in 45 to air. So, Tim, just going on air with you after the titles and headlines, Karen.
Hello, I'm Karen Ginoni. An act of terror that defies all understanding. A soldier's murdered in a London street in broad daylight. The Prime Minister says it was not just an attack on Britain and the British way of life, it was also a betrayal of Islam. Our top story on Impact today. It's now emerged that both the suspects in the brutal attack were already known to the security services. The British Prime Minister David Cameron's been to the barracks near where the murdered soldier was based. Earlier, he described the attackers as sickening individuals. He said Britain would defeat such people by challenging the poisonous narrative of...
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know Something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger.
And also on Impact, we'll meet the head of one of Afghanistan's biggest media companies who has a surprisingly upbeat view of the country's future. Hello and welcome. The UK will never give in to terror or terrorism. Those are the words of the British Prime Minister after a dramatic 24 hours. A violent and very public killing of a serving soldier on the streets of London has shocked the nation. Across London, there are more than 1,000 extra police officers on the streets. The full facts about what happened yesterday afternoon are still emerging, but this is what we know.
Okay, within about 30, Tim, can you just keep the links quite short?
Around 20 kilometres from the city centre. Just after 2 p.m., a soldier leaves a military barracks and then is hit by a car as he walks along the road. Two men jump out of the car and attack him with knives and a meat cleaver. The men then drag his body into the middle of the road. Eyewitnesses say one of the men said he carried out the attack because British soldiers killed Muslims every day. When armed police arrive 14 minutes later, the men reportedly charge at the car with their weapons. Officers shoot the attackers. They're now in hospital under armed guard. Government sources say the suspects were known to security services. One of the suspects understood to be a 28-year-old Muslim convert, Michael Adebalajo. Well, let's get the very latest from Woolwich and go over to my colleague, Tim Wilcox. Tim.
Okay, Tim, run the package. You've got 2 minutes if you've got an umbrella. We've got 2 minutes on this.
Well-wishers bearing flowers have started arriving at the scene of the murders. Flowers, too, at the huge Woolwich barracks near here. A massive police operation is centred on the town. This morning, officers were searching the ground inch by inch, trying to reconstruct the minutes of madness that left a British soldier dead on a British street, trying to work out why these men acted as they did.
Remove your government, they don't care about you!
Earlier, the government's Cobra Emergency Committee met, and the government confirmed...
One and a half, Tim, one and a half on this.
The Prime Minister said yesterday's events were not just an attack on us, but a betrayal of Islam.
The people who did this were trying to divide us. They should know something like this will only bring us together and make us stronger. Today, our thoughts are with the victim and with his family. They are grieving for their loved one, and we have lost a brave soldier.
1 minute, Tim, 1 minute. You're introing Gardner next.
He spent time discussing the incident with senior police officers. He's described what happened here as sickening and unforgivable. The police operation is fast moving. It appears to be focusing on family members.
45, Tim.
This flat in Greenwich was raided early this morning. Neighbours said three unidentified women and a teenager were taken away. In this area, there is real anger at the murder. Last night, Woolwich was tense.
30 seconds.
Hustled with police, the town centre was flooded with officers, and that operation...
25, Tim.
...officers on duty at the moment, who are being highly visible to reassure people in all parts of London that life carries on at normal, and my appeal is for calm while this investigation takes place.
The identity of the dead soldier...
10 seconds, 9, 8, 7. Intro to the Gardner package in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Cue, Tim. No, 2 minutes on this, Tim. 2 minutes.
The slow, painstaking...
Next, Tim. Intro into the Rainsford SOT.
...the attack in Woolwich. It's now emerged that the suspects were known to the security service for their radical views, but it's not thought that they were under surveillance.
Morning.
This morning in Whitehall, key political, security and intelligence figures arrived for a meeting at the government's emergency committee called COBRA. The Prime Minister chaired it. Boris Johnson was amongst those attending.
It is completely wrong to blame this killing on the religion of Islam, but it is also equally wrong to try to draw any link between this murder and British foreign policy or the actions of British forces who are risking their lives abroad for the sake of freedom.
This is where one of the suspects has been taken, the Royal London Hospital.
1 minute.
Whitechapel. He'll likely be questioned when he recovers from being shot by the police yesterday. The lines of inquiry being followed up by investigators include, were they acting alone? Who did they meet? And where did they travel to? As the people of Woolwich still come to terms with what's happened on those streets, one former British radical says the attackers understood the propaganda value of their message.
Where we have failed is
30 seconds.
Narratives to this ideology that completely disconnects somebody who, quite clearly speaking, in a London accent, and is willing to kill his own fellow citizens, probably for a country that he's never visited, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan, and he has more affinity to citizens.
15, Tim. Okay, intro to Rainsford Sot next, please. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Q-tip.
The people of Woolwich.
Right, thanks, Tim. On a Sot, 120, back to you.
Extraordinary acts of heroism yesterday when people tried to help the victim.
Tim, we can take a minute from you on the back of this to round this off, if that's okay.
Also seen today a huge queue of people coming to lay flowers and express their sympathy and condolences. And there's been a real outpouring of public sympathy and grief about this awful attack.
It is a mixed area, ethnically and religiously. Have there been any other problems in the past with radical Islam?
No, I think it's right to say that this is the first, if it is, as appears likely,
45.
Product of Islamic extremism. That is the first time it has happened in this community. We have had other problems in the past. There was a bomb here planted by the IRA in the 1980s at the time of the...
30 seconds, Tim.
We got over that particular difficulty, and the community, which is a very diverse one, has been working very positively together. Interestingly, this time a year ago, we were
20, Tim.
People from all over the world to the Olympic Games, taking place one of the events here as part of the Olympics.
Stand by, 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Q-tip, 10 seconds.
Tim, thank you. Tim Wilcox there in Woolwich.
Tim, very nicely done. Thanks to you and 777 all round. Very nicely done.